Shalom Aleichem, everybody. Welcome, welcome. Parashat Toldot Sameach. It's good to have everybody here. This shiul sort of originated in a impromptu, unplanned conversation with Gabriella about 2 months ago. So thank you, Gabriella. Couple of sort of introductions. Firstly, chatati chet gadol li'imaot ba'avar. In the past, I feel I have, in several years worth of giving shiurim on Shemot, let's hope we pick up from it, giving shiurim on Bereshit. The imaot, the mothers, the wives, Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, Leah, haven't always come off the best. Part of the reason for that is that we try in our approach to Tanakh to do pshuto shel mikra, to do meet the stories as we greet them, as we encounter them, to treat the avot as being humans, and it's on account of their humanity which makes them interesting and compelling and important to us as models and as teachers, because we can identify with their personalities. We do not share the approach of Rav Aaron Kotler and others, which is essentially to see the Avot as not superhuman in the sense of not being human, in which case there's not really very much that one can do with Chumash in terms of learning from it, because the characters in it are not anything like us, you, me, the people we know. Rather, we take the approach that the characters in it, just as we are fallible, so they are fallible. In the past, that has meant that when we are looking at stories such as the expulsion of Yishmael, and we want to look at the human character of Yishmael and paint Yishmael in a compelling light as a small child, or at least not a full-grown adult who is being fought over, in that sort of circumstance, Sarah hasn't necessarily come off so well. Last year in particular, and the reason why I'm giving this shiul this week as opposed to next week, I gave a shiul for Parashat Toldot on Genevat HaBrachot, the theft of the bracha that Yitzchak had intended to give to Esav, and that instead went to Yaakov. And it is... And it is the case there that Yaakov, in taking the bracha from Esav, is not really the active character. Rather, his mother, Rivka, is much more the active character. And in our reading last year, a reading which I'm still completely convinced of, Rivka did not come off at all well, but rather Rivka came off as responsible for a tragedy and catastrophe on epic terms, which never needed to happen whatsoever. To quickly, very briefly, summarise that to pique your interest in case you weren't there or don't remember it, and to entice you to go and listen to the recording, our claim last year was that Yitzchak never intended to give the bracha to Esav. He always intended to give the bracha to Yaakov, and it was Rivka's tragic error in not communicating with her husband that led to that confusion. She didn't need to do the whole pretense, and Rivka came off terribly in that shiur. And it's not that I've changed my mind about that, or that I've changed my mind about how to read necessarily the story of Hagar and Yishmael. It's only that I realise that Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, Velea need to be treated in their own right as heroines. And so I'm not just going to try and look sympathetically at Hagar and Yishmael, for instance, as we have in the past, but rather to look sympathetically at Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, Velea. That's the first introduction as to why this shiur. The second introduction is more specifically related to Parshat Toldot, which is the only parsha in which Yitzchak features as the central character. And in fact, it's not really true to say that he features the central character in Parshat Toldot. You will recall that Chaye Sarah ends with the death of Avraham, and Parshat Toldot begins with Yaakov and Esav. In other words, we basically seem to jump straight over Yitzchak. He only has one chapter, which is his own chapter, where he is the central character, where he is not being acted upon, either by his father at the Akedah, or by his sons, when it comes to who will get the bracha. The only chapter that is truly his is Perek Kafvav, is chapter 26. And there is frequently an approach which says that Yitzchak is sort of a non-character. All that Yitzchak does is to repeat that of his father. I will read to you a midrash. I'm not going to give out the source sheets just yet. I'm going to wait for a strategic moment, but this is the first source on the sheet. Ba'u v'ra'ah, says Midrash HaGadol, come and see. Shekol ma she'ira la'Avraham ira li'Yitzchak. Everything that happened to Abraham happened to Yitzchak. Abraham gala v'Yitzchak gala. Abraham was exiled from the land, so was Yitzchak, time of famine. Abraham nistapku al ishto, v'Yitzchak nistapku al ishto. Both had doubts, I guess, that refers to infertility with regards to their wives. Abraham kinu bo plishtim v'Yitzchak kach. Abraham had fights with the plishtim, so did Yitzchak. Abraham holid levasof. Abraham gave birth at the end v'Yitzchak kach, so did Yitzchak. Abraham yatsa mimenu tzadik v'rasha. Abraham had one righteous child and one wicked child v'Yitzchak kach, so too did Yitzchak. Abraham haya ra'a biyamav v'Yitzchak kach. Abraham had a famine in his time, so did Yitzchak she'enemah v'hi rav ba'aretz, and there was a famine in the land, just as there was in the time of Abraham. There's even a midrash right at the beginning of Parashat Toldot, Ele Toldot, Yitzchak ben Avraham, these are the generations of Yitzchak, the son of Abraham. Abraham holidet Yitzchak, Abraham gave birth to Yitzchak. The second half of the verse seems to just copy the first half of the verse, says the Midrash, which Rashi quotes. This is to tell you that they were identical to one another. Literally, not just Yitzchak's life copied Abraham, but they were almost like identical twins, just in different generations. This is a big approach. It's not necessarily an approach which puts down Yitzchak, right? Some people say he's just not a character. Other people say, no, that's exactly his yofi, that's exactly his speciality, that he is somebody who copies, he is somebody who replicates, and, you know, maybe in, you know, our generation, which is obsessed with innovation and disruption, we think that the only worthwhile contribution that a person can make to the world is to do something new. Have or mel, I think what Yitzchak teaches us is that actually carrying on what has been done before is just as critical and just as important. I believe that. I wholeheartedly believe that. I've drashed about that on a Friday night here in the past, and I really think it's one of the most important things that we can learn. However, having said that, this is the second introduction. This shiur is also going to put Yitzchak and Rivka as our heroes to reveal the end, and to present Yitzchak and Rivka not simply as repetitions of the end, but to repetitions of the previous generation, but actually as having a substantial and unique and very important contribution of their own. With those two introductions, let us begin. We are going to look at these three generations, Abraham and Sarah, Yitzchak and Rivka, Yaakov and Rachel, Leah will have to wait for another time, through the prism of infertility. Infertility, the difficulty, the inability to have children, is something which is common to all of the Avot and the Emaot. It is clearly one of the major themes of Bereshit. It's not only in Bereshit, it's also elsewhere in Tanakh. Maybe towards the end we'll try and have a think about why specifically, but that's going to be the window through which we're going to approach it. Let's start with Sarah. Open up to Bereshit Perek Tet Zayin, chapter 16. Hang on there, what page is it?
71.
71. Abraham, or better, more correctly, Avram and Sarai, been together a very long time. A very, very long time. and they don't have children. And of course, children aren't important for Avraham and Sarai simply in the way in which they're important for any couple. But Avraham's also been given this promise, right? I'm going to make you into a great nation. Your children are going to be very numerous. What's going to happen? V'Sarai, Pasuk Aleph, Eshet Avraham, Lo Yalda, Lo. Sarai had not given birth. V'la, Shifcha Mitzrit, Ushma Hagar. And she had an Egyptian maid whose name was Hagar. Vatomer Sarai el Avram. Sarah says to Avram, Hineina atzarani Hashem miledet. God has prevented me from having children. Bona el shifchati. Come to my maidservant. Ulai ibane mimena. This is I'm going to give a literal translation just to actually capture it. What does Art Scroll say? Well, Art Scroll gives it. Perhaps I will be built up through her. Nobody says that in modern English. Ibane. Perhaps I will be built up through somebody else. But it's quite clear what she means. Perhaps you will be able to have a child with Hagar, and through this I will have a child. I will be built up through her. It will be a form of surrogacy. Right? Not surrogacy in the way we actually speak about it today, but a sort of, I don't know, would you call it, consider it adopted? It will be considered also as Sarah's child. V'yishma Avram l'kol Sarai. Avram listens to Sarai. Thoughts? Readings? Responses to this?
Sarah expecting the baby that comes from Hagar to like be her own, or just to say like my role in Abraham's life is to provide him children, because I can't do that, Hagar will give him that. So because I've like failed in that place, Hagar will take in that place, and like I will be built up from that means like I kind of get a pass for not fulfilling my role to provide.
Yeah, fair ma'od. Excellent question. I will just use the question as an opportunity to plug Mishmar on Thursday night, when Rabbi Rafi Ice, head of the new Smicha program at Yeshivat Har Tzion, is giving a shiur on surrogacy in halacha and modern medical developments, which are creating halachic questions which simply didn't exist a generation ago as to identity of the mother. Is the woman who gives birth to be considered the mother, or is the woman whom provides the DNA to be considered the mother? Your question is a version of that. Will Sarah be considered the mother of the child, or is Sarah simply allowing? Ma'omrim, what do we think? Ah, okay. I mean, we're going to come exactly to that. But right now, at this stage,
it seems like she's giving up her place.
I'm not. Sheva, Nemi?
Yeah, it
definitely does seem a lot about this being for Avraham. That's already, admittedly, this isn't Sarah's language, but just in the opening verse, Lo Yalda Lo. She hadn't given birth to him. I mean, Lo Yalda for herself, right? She also wants to become a mother. But you're right, Avraham is being put very front and center. Nemi?
It's also something that, like, the language of Anemi Mena sounds very much like it's through her, but it's not for Hagar, it's for Sarah. Like, she's just sort of, she's doing it, but then, like, the child's going to be Sarah's.
Tony?
I think it's more, she was, like, embarrassed that she was barren, and the phrase built up is less about building a family, more about building her own confidence.
Interesting. So just to plug that into what Elisheva, the two options that Elisheva gave, that means that she will be considered as the mother of the child?
That she herself, it's less about wanting a child, more about wanting to be able to have one.
And Hagar will allow her that.
Yeah.
Right. I think I am convinced of that. The Ibaneh, I mean, the simplest way in which she could have said it would be, and then you will have a child. Ulai ibane is, you know, this will happen to me. Did he?
I mean, maybe this is just me, but does anybody else feel like I wanted Avraham to say no first, especially because the juxtaposition is right after God promises, like, that he will be a nation, right?
Good, yeah.
And then, so, like, you have God promise, and then Sarai comes to Avraham, and she's like, listen, maybe this isn't working. And, like, part of you kind of wants Avraham to be like, no, God said it would work out. Don't worry. I'm not going to do this.
So, I'm not quite sure how to give this shiur, and let's just be very clear as well. The shiur is not simply a let's read Tanakh and like enjoy reading Tanakh as it normally is. This is also about, you know, one of the most sensitive and painful issues that there are. And so this sort of, you know, discussion is going to get into some of the most delicate emotions that can be there between a couple. And yeah, that's, I mean, that would be one potential response, which is not there, of Avraham saying no, I don't want to. So I'm so happy to see people's hands, and I want to take all the hands, but also I just want to sort of move the question to what I asked, but which was, we went in a different direction, was how do you look at Sarah for saying this? As in, what do you get from it? Lauren?
I feel like in a way she's almost like not trusting in God and saying like, even though you said that like,
that is, if you're putting your hand up to respond to that, don't for now, because that's going to get us to something a little bit, which I want to open up very much. What is Sarah's, how does Sarah see herself in relationship to God's promise, I think is critical. Brilliant, brilliant point.
Isn't God's promise after?
No, it's the previous chapter. It's chapter 15. So hold the thoughts. Hold that point, Max.
I was gonna say about that she similar to that is that she seems like she's, because the promise so far has been that Avram will have this nation, but it mentions nothing about her. So she knows that he's supposed to have a nation. So she is taking it into her own hands to make sure that is the case. It's just not with her.
Good. So what none of you are saying, which I want you to say, is this is the most astonishing verse. This is a... None of you are married, okay? Robbie, you are. I mean, like, this is... What it takes for Sarah to say this? Right? They've been together for decades. They have dreamed together. They were together, we know, already in Ur Kasdim. Right? Avraham has shared his dreams with her. She shared her dreams with him, that combination of the two of them is very, very clear from the start. She is unable to have children, and she says, try with Hagar. I mean, that should shock you, right? I mean, much as I understand what Didi is saying, that I want Avram to say, no, I want to be with you, but, like, the fact that she says it should blow your mind, Yael?
Is it during this, like, time period, isn't that a common thing to do?
In terms of... Nachum Sana, who is no relation to Rabbi Sana, has the book on putting, it's called Understanding Genesis, on putting sort of Bereshit into the context of the ancient world. He does have a chapter on it. It was common, I think, in the way in which it's common today, with a different technology, but unlike the technology of today, she is not able to still be as biological. She's not able to be biologically involved at all. Yishmael will not, in terms of DNA, be her child whatsoever. So you're right, it was part of the world, but it's by no means a clear thing. I mean, saying simple sense, you know, if it was, then it would have happened decades earlier. Hello? What's that mean?
As in,
she had Ruach HaKodesh.
It wasn't necessarily her own, you know, decision that she wanted to do it, but there was something, you know, pushing her, and he saw it and he agreed.
Maybe, but all I have is the pasuk in front of me, and I don't have that there. I mean, if you want to introduce Ruach HaKodesh into these discussions, then you'd want to put that, I think, much more with Rivka. As in Rivka, there it's no explicit in the verse. She goes lidrosh et Hashem, and she hears something back. Last point before we move on, Hadassah.
So playing off what Hillel said, later on when Sarah is kicking Hagar out and Avram disagrees and Hashem says, listen to Sarah, like, she does have that element of Ruach HaKodesh, that, like, all knowing that Hashem says Avram should listen to her, and Avram may know this already about her.
Now is not the time, but I think we need to have a public discussion about what is Ruach HaKodesh and what it does for how we read. Ruach HaKodesh generally, I think the phrase implies, Hashem inspires somebody to say something, and then that happens. That's not necessarily what happens in what you're referring to. Sarah says something, and Hashem says, Sarah's right.
Right.
I mean, yeah, Hashem gets Ruach Sarah, right?
Rashi agrees with me.
Sorry?
Turns out Rashi agrees with me.
Great. Asherecha, I'd say that you agree with Rashi, but in any case. The point, I think, that just to I think you have, I mean, again, trying to read this in the simple, most human ways, should be blown over by what Sarah says. It's an astonishing thing to suggest, and that plays through so strongly with what then happens, right? Avram, in fact, I mean, there are also, if we're reading the passage closely, there are also some interesting words in there, right? A bo, what's bo?
Come.
And what's its connotation? Its connotation is marriage. Right, or its connotation is really intimate. Bona, right? That na has that na's got a significant element there. Ulai, right? Ulai is a very, very significant word in Bereshit. Right? There's a lot of, I'll say politeness. That's the wrong word. There's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of emuna in that pasuk. But it's not vayavo. Avram doesn't do the yavo, right? Pami, quite right, by Avoel Hagar, I take that back, right? Vateire ki harata, she becomes pregnant. Vatekel gvirta be'ineha, and her mistress, Sarah, becomes cheapened in her eyes. Vatomir Sarai el Avram, Sarah says to Avram, Chamasi alecha, my anger is against you. Anochi natati shifchati, I gave her to you. Vateire ki harata, become pregnant. Ve'ekel b'nei, look what's happened to me. Yishpot Hashem b'ni u'v'necha. Let God judge between the two of us. Ve'yome Avram el Sarai, hinei shifchatech b'yadech. She's in your hand. Asila chatov b'nech, do whatever you want. Ve'ta'aneh Sarai v'tivrach mifaneh. Sarah, ta'aneh is a word which could mean a number of things. It can have a really abusive meaning violent. It can mean sexual violence as well in certain contexts. Or it could just simply be she punishes her, and Hagar runs away. What's happened to Sarah? Sarai. What's happened to her? Why this switch between huge generosity on the one hand, really overwhelming generosity, and then just not being able to take it? Pinchas?
The plan backfired. She wanted that she would be built up from it, and she was precisely the opposite happened.
Good. Ulai Ibaneh was her hope. Perhaps I will be built up for it, and the opposite happened. If Vatakel is the opposite of that. Yeah, Avi?
I don't know why we skipped over these words before, and like the pasuk bet, but it says Atzaron Yashem, we let it, so when Sarah speaks.
We skipped over them because no one mentioned them. Tell me about them.
Well, we didn't like talk, so the words after that, but like, she's not saying that I wasn't able to be pregnant. God
good.
Didn't, so
great.
When she's saying that to Avraham, like, she wants God to listen to that.
It's an extremely religious pasuk. What does that mean? You want Avraham?
Sarah easily could have said, "Atzaron, you let it. I cannot give birth." But God, like Sarah's is hoping that God's gonna listen to her and say, "Oh, maybe I should I can't give birth. If God would make me give birth." And then during the Pesukim, Sarah's annoyed because God didn't really listen to her because by putting God into it, Sarah's hoping that she'll be the wife. But by the time now that nothing's happening, she feels like hope is lost.
Interesting. Yeah, fair. So Pinchas has said a very good, simple reading that she didn't just want there to be a child, she wanted to be built up through it, and that has not happened. Very good. Lauren?
From what you said earlier, like it's an astonishing statement. Why
happened. So like it was, it's crazy to see that. So now, like, now that it actually happened, like, she didn't tell us anything, like, oh my God, I can't believe it actually happened. Like, I don't want to fight anymore, but you can't really.
I think that's great. Nechama Leibovitz builds off the Ramban to basically say exactly what you said, that Sarah's fault here was an inability to predict her own jealousy. Right? I think that's very, very powerful. I'm sure everybody here has had this experience in miniature in the past. I know I certainly have, where, you know, whatever it is, the circumstances are that you make a really generous offer to somebody and you'll put yourself out massively, right? And then, who knows what, the person just, like, takes it for granted and, you know, doesn't thank you, right? Or something like that. And, like, you know, your ego is really hurt. Like, you know, you genuinely really wanted to do something, right? And, you know, like, that should have been recognised. And, like, you end up regretting it. And this is that happening in, you know, in a much, much bigger picture, a much bigger and more painful version of that. So it's not simply Pinchas that it didn't happen, but it's, you know, it's the emotional impact of that.
Right, I think that's potentially clear from her reaction not only to Hagar but also to Avram. First of all, I imagine she thought of herself as doing something good for Hagar as well.
Hmm?
So when Hagar completely didn't, you know, took it for granted, she and even did the exact opposite and kind of ridiculed Sarah. Then that hurt, especially with Avram not standing up for Sarah seemingly. I mean, it doesn't seem like he did, especially with the way she reacts.
And that would be your explanation of Chamasi Alecha.
Yeah.
My anger is against you that you didn't then step in to protect me.
Right. I've done this thing for both of you, and she's doing something to me, and you're not even doing anything about it.
Yafemod. Very good. That's one explanation, and it's a great explanation. It's a true explanation. Explanation two of Chamasi Alecha, of why I am angry with you, Avram. Where's Hagar from?
Mitzrayim.
We've been there before. When were we there?
When Bnei Yisrael were enslaved. Or did you mean
famine? Exactly. Perek Yudbet. They visited together, Eli. Chapter 12. And what happened there?
It says
sister. And it's a terrible story, right? It's a terrible, terrible story. It's absolutely horrible. Exactly. Sarai is, you know, violently taken. You know, there's sexual violence is at the center of that chapter. Avram is unable to protect her. Even if you take a sort of reading which, you know, tries to excuse Avram, you know, he isn't serving just the basic role of what he should be to be able to protect her. I mean, maybe prefer to be in famine in Canaan than, you know, captured by Paro and his people. Thankfully, Hashem steps in. And then what happens at the end of the chapter? Why does it work out? I mean, what do they come back with? Not wealth, riches, and avadim u'shvachot. They come back with male and female servants. It's not a difficult, tenuous suggestion at all. It's probably pshat. That's where Hagar comes from. Hagar is a souvenir, is an ongoing reminder of that moment. Now suddenly, when Hagar is pregnant and is acting in such a way as to look down upon Sarah, suddenly now that repressed trauma and anger of her experience in Mitzrayim, where Avram didn't protect her, now suddenly boils up. And now she says, Chamasi Alecha. It's not that she's, this is from Max's teacher, and who wrote an excellent book, Rabbi Tzvi Grammer. It's not that she is overreacting. It's that simply she is now finally reacting. Right? She's not reacting to what's taking place in Perek Tet Zayin, chapter 16. She's reacting to what took place years earlier in chapter 12. That's what is paining her so much. That's explanation two of Chamasi Alecha. Third explanation is the following one, and some of you in your comments before sort of touched on this. Turn to chapter 15. Chapter 15 is the final word on page 64. Chapter 15 is Brit Ben Habatarim, the covenant between the parts. It is the ultimate moment of Hashem's promise to Avraham of children. And it begins with Avraham saying to God, how is this going to happen? As we read it, listen to the following. You can also take and pass on whilst we're reading. Sorry, a lot more on this side. Achar hadvarim ha'ele, it was after these things. Haya dvar Hashem el Avraham. God appears to Avram, says, don't fear, I'm going to look after you. You're going to have a great reward. Avram cuts in. And he says, Vayomer Avram, Adoni Hashem, matiten li. What could you possibly give me? Va'ani holech ariri. I'm walking without children. Uven mesek beiti. The most significant person in my household is this Damascus, Eliezer. Vayomer Avram says, Hen li lo natata zera. Zara, you haven't given me any children. Vine ben beiti yoreshoti. And this non-family member in my house, he's going to inherit me. And then Hashem comforts him, says, step outside, see the stars, etc., etc. What is just so bolet, what jumps out at you in that verse that we read about Avraham talking about children?
He references where he's from, where he was from.
Okay, that jumps out. That's interesting. But specifically, what else?
Anochi. So everything's me, 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 not
Sarah. Me, 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 me. It's so singular. It's first person singular, right? I mean, just read it again. Anochi holech ariri. Li lo natata zera. Ben beiti yoresh oti. Where is Sarah in that? Sarah is not mentioned at all. The Radak in the second source says that he didn't actually pray about Sarah. Look at Rashi now. Rashi comments, this is the third source on the sheet. Rashi commenting on chapter 16. Chamasi alecha, I am angry with you, says Sarah to Avram. Chamas ha'asui li, the violence done to me. Alech ani matil ha'onesh. I hold you responsible for it, not Hagar. Kshehit palalta lahakadosh baruch hu, when you, previous chapter, prayed to God, saying, Matiten li v'anochi holech ariri, what will you give me? I am without children. Lohit palalta ela avurecha, ela alecha. You didn't pray except for yourself. V'haya lecha lihit palel al shneinu. You should have prayed for both of us. V'hayiti ani nifkedet imcha. And had you done so, perhaps we'd have had children. You said this is all about you. You. You didn't say, Sarah, my beautiful wife of many decades, who I love so much, she doesn't have children. Why didn't you include me in your tefillot? I blame you for this. Hagar never needs to be introduced into the story.
Could this offer an explanation as to why Sarah was so humiliated when Hagar conceived? Because, like, if you look at Abraham's whole prayer, it seems to be he's putting the burden on himself. He can't produce the seed. Whereas when he could have a child with Hagar, it seems that Sarah was the problem. Like, the infertility was on her and not on him. Because she seems to be, like, the most upset about that Hagar could conceive and that she couldn't.
Interesting. Interesting. I hear it, but I'm not sure that Avram is saying in chapter 15, I am unable to have children, biologically. I think he's just saying, you haven't given me children. Lonatata. Does he think it's him? Does he not think it's him? Maybe. We'll see in a later midrash, two generations later, that comes back, that Avram is unsure as to whether the actual difficulty is his. But I think the power of that Rashi is the emotional power of it. You put yourself at the center of the picture and you excluded me from it. Adkan, Avram and Sarah. I'm going to skip two generations. Let's go to Yaakov and Rachel, beginning of Perek Lamed. Next week's parasha And when I taught this for 929 a couple of months ago, like, this is just maybe the most painful chapter in Bereishit, right? It's just, you know, these two sisters, Rachel and Leah, you know, fighting with one another over their husband, and, you know, the way in which they score points against one another is children. Bottom of page 152. V'tere Rachel ki lo yalda li Yaakov. Rachel saw that she hadn't had children for Yaakov. V'tekane Rachel ba'achota. She was jealous of her sister. V'tomer el Yaakov, and she says to Yaakov, Hava li banim, give me children. V'im ayin meta anochi, I'm going to die. So like we did with the first pasuk of Sarah, what do you read? What do you read about this? What do you see in this? Hava li banim, v'im ayin meta anochi. Give me children. If you don't, I'm going to die.
It's very dramatic, like, meaning it's very dramatic. She doesn't necessarily have to die. She doesn't have kids.
Whoa, right?
Like, and then Sarah was also just putting it, like, in the positive spin. Like, maybe I'll be built up from having kids versus this is kind of like a negative spin. Like, if I don't have kids,
There's a world of difference between Rachel and Sarah. Definitely agreed. So many hands. This is beautiful. Who hasn't spoken much? Edda.
Like, if I don't have kids, I'll die, and then she ends up dying.
You know, it's the Rashbam. Somebody get me Bereishit 2 in the top left, the Torat Chaim. The Rashbam, who's just the Torat Chaim, yeah, Bereishit 2.
It's the second one from the right.
Thanks. The Rashbam, who, as we might remember from previous Shiurim, is just obsessed with Pshuto Shel Mikra. Right, he's obsessed with, you know, the simple reading of the verses. So listen to what he says. Well, I mean, well done for spotting it. It's just so funny and sort of so painful that he just says it at a sort of like completely technical point, but he just draws your attention to it. Rashbam, Meta Anochi, I'm going to die. Ta'amo Lamata. The ta'am, the, I think that means the cantal, the way in which you, the emphasis where you pronounce it, shehu po'el. The grammar, the way you pronounce it, is in a certain thing because it's about the future. Aval meta alai Rachel, but when many years later Yaakov says, Rachel died on me, meta alai Rachel, right, coming back, right, she died, derech bet lechem, hi efrata, ta'amo lamala, then the vowel and the vocalization is in a slightly different place, shehu l'sha'aval, because it relates to the past, right? She says, "Im ayin meta anochi." If I don't have children, I'm going to die. Then she dies in childbirth, and years later, Yaakov says, "Meta alai Rachel, meta alai, meta." Right, and it's a slightly different vocalization. So the Rashbam wants to show you that the reason why the vocalization is slightly different is because one is future looking, one is past looking. But you're like, whoa, 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 you know, Rabbi Shmuel ben Meir, right? You've shown me a great technical thing. Thank you for telling me about the vocalization. But you've also, by doing that, shown me this, like, terribly painful emotional thing, and you haven't said a word about that, right? I mean, you said ironic, Ed, and I find it heartbreaking, right? She, you know, she does eventually, that verse is almost repeated, because she does eventually, her dream is fulfilled, and she dies, right? I mean, it's just there, that's there. Okay, what else is there in what else do you hear in that?
I don't know. I think we're comparing apples and oranges here because, like, in the case of Sarah's, before even I get to my garden, like, if you have a little more context in the story, if you have to learn the fact before, like, there's the sitting before is just Yaakov having children with Leah. It's child after child after child.
So,
after
an added dimension to it. Yeah.
It's a much different dimension, and that's not it's not that even like Rachel being it's her sister too, and like. Yeah, but Yaakov worked. Yeah.
Right after this, Rachel gives Bilhah, so it's got a parallel in that regard.
We're going to see Midrashim, which absolutely make these intergenerational, which draw apart both the differences. Right, the offer comes afterwards. What's the vim ayin meita anochi? It is extreme. What do we view of that? How do we see this statement? If I don't have children, I'm going to die. Sorry. Dramatic? Overly dramatic or understandable?
overly dramatic. Daniil?
I would also say overly dramatic, but I think she's, like, something is snapped here, because not only is she being really dramatic, she's asking Yako, who is clearly not the problem, physically speaking, and if there's a problem between, like, her and God, like, you know, she's going to the wrong address, and her threat doesn't really make sense, even more so considering that she's asking the wrong person. Is she basically saying, I'm going to commit suicide if I don't? None of it matches up, and it seems kind of
interesting. Good. So let me introduce you to two quick sources. The Gemara in Masechet Brachot says that a person who doesn't have children, chashuv kamet, is considered as if they are dead. Where does it learn this from? It learns it from here, right? From this pasuk. That's a very, very extreme statement by the Gemara. Many years later, Rabbi Yitzchak Arama. Anyone heard of Rabbi Yitzchak Arama? Not me.
You have heard of Rabbi.
I have heard of him. Rabbi Yitzchak Arama is late Spanish medieval Parshan, wrote a book. He was the first person in the history of Jewish book writing to be able to copyright the name of the book, Akedat Yitzchak. That is the name of his drashot on Bereshit. He criticizes Rachel here sort of for the opposite reason of the Gemara doesn't criticize it. The Gemara simply says you learn from Rachel that someone who doesn't have children is as if they are dead. Rabbi Yitzchak Arama basically takes the opposite approach. It says, Chas v'shalom, that a woman should think that if she isn't able to have children, that, you know, her life is over. You know, as if, you know, that's her only role, that, you know, a woman can achieve so much as an individual, as an independent person, even without children. A person's worth shouldn't be dependent on whether or not they are able to have children. So there are different responses to how you look at that extremity. But what does Yaakov do? V'yichar af Yaakov b'Rachel. His anger flares against her. Very strong phrase. V'yomer, and he says, Hatachat Elohim Anochi, am I in place of God, asher mana mimech pri batem, who God, am I in place of God who has prevented you from having children? And what do you read in that? So what's the again?
Like, just like how Abraham was like, Anochi,
about
that again, it's this othering of, like, the wife in a way that, like, makes it feel less of, like, marriage as a partnership as opposed to, like, marriage as, like, you're doing your thing and I'm doing my thing, and that's it.
Except that it's much worse, in that it's not, I mean, you sort of picture Abraham in chapter 15 as out by himself. You're right, Sarah did hear about it, but here it's the response.
Right,
it's
the extreme form of that. He's yelling here,
right.
It's your problem.
Now, in some ways, according to what Daniil said before, it's quite understandable. You said he's going to the wrong address. She's going to the wrong address, right? And Yaakov says, I'm not God, right? I don't want to say it in these words, but the problem is not me, right? Talk to God, right? Have a religious response is what he seems to be saying. Hello?
When you read it, Hatachet Elohim Anochi, I immediately thought of Hashomer Achi Anochi, which is...
Am I my brother's keeper?
Right.
Kayin talking to God about Hevel, and what did you think when you thought of that?
So, on the one hand, you know, they're both, you know, legitimate claims. Am I instead of God, or, you know, am I my brother's keeper? But on the other hand, still, they both have something they could do to, you know...
Something can be technically truthful and also just completely wrong.
Yeah, and they...
I like that. I think they've got...
He does bear some responsibility in this case, similarly to Cain not killing his brother.
What is the responsibility that he bears in this case?
It could be, you know, tefillah, it could be this all sorts of things.
Good.
You know?
Good. Eden, and then we're gonna move.
I guess, like, it makes sense for her to turn to him because, like, it's his family that, like, has this connection.
So she's coming in from the outside. Right? But also, like, I feel like everyone's been saying she's dramatic, and I, like, don't see that. Like, having children was everything that, like,
I don't want to get into, maybe we'll get into the personal towards the end, not my personal, but friends of mine. I mean, if it's not just back then, it's today. You know, there are couples, you know, only 5-6 years older than you guys. You know, inability to have children when everyone around you is having children. It's you get the sense of meta anochi, of I'm dying. Absolutely. Look at the Midrash. Bereshit Rabbah. V'yichar af Yaakov b'Rachel. Yaakov's anger flared against her. Let's see what Chazal thought of this. They quote a pasuk in Iyov. Oh, I'm sorry. I meant to put the pasuk on the source sheet. Elisheva, run for us quickly. Iyov chapter 15. This is what they say. Well, this is the pasuk. Hachacham ya'aneh.
What pasuk?
Yeah, it's all right. I can. Chapter 15. I think it's the. Sorry, 16 even. I think it's the first pasuk in the chapter. This is the words of Eliphaz. Vayomer Eliphaz hatemani vayomar. Hachacham ya'aneh da'adruach v'yemale kadim bitno. That is the pasuk in Iyov, which translates as, should a wise man utter windy knowledge, should he, and fill his belly with the east wind? Says Rabbi Yochanan, Hachacham ya'aneh dat ruach, should a wise man speak with great wind, as in speak for far too long? Obviously not. Ze Avraham, this is Avraham. Shene'emar, v'yishma Avraham lekol sarai. Avraham listens to what his wife has to say. Avraham doesn't say a single word in the passage that we read. That's a wise man. And fill his belly with the east wind. In other words, speaking far too long when you shouldn't be speaking. Zeh Yaakov. V'yichar af Yaakov b'Rachel. V'yomar. You're angry, engaged in debate. Sometimes when your partner is extremely emotionally fragile and expressing that, even if they are saying words, they are not actually engaging in discussion and debate. They don't want you to talk back to them. They want you to hug them. That's what Rachel wanted. But instead, he gets angry and he talks back to her. Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu. God said, this very much connects to Didi and other people's points, Kach onim et hameikot, is this how you reply to somebody who is in great pain? Is this how to speak to him? Skip a little bit, the beginning of the fourth line in the Hebrew. Amra lo, she said to him, Kach asa avicha, right, the Midrash now elaborates the conversation. Is this what your father did? Li mecha, to your mother, Yitzchak to Rivka. Lo chagar matnav kenegda, did he not join with her and share it with her? Amar la, he said, avi lo haya lo banim. My father didn't have children. Aval ani yesh banim, but I've already got children, right? So Yaakov is taking the Avi Shefet's apples and oranges line. You can't compare the two. There weren't children. I've got children. Don't talk to me. Mimech mana, mimeni lo mana. God prevented you. He hasn't prevented me. Amra lo, she says back to him, okay, kachasa avich, Amra lo, she says to her, end of the fourth line. V'ziknecha, and what about your grandfather? Lo haya lo banim, Abraham didn't have children. V'chagar matnav k'neged Sarah, and he joined with Sarah, he helped her, he took her plan. Amar la, so Yaakov says, okay, nu, yechola at la'asot k'shem sh'asta ziknati. You could do the same thing that my grandmother did. Amra lo, she says to him, ma'asta, what did Sarah do? Amar la, hichnisa sarata l'toch beita, she brought her maidservant into the house. Amra lo, she says to him, im hadavar hazeh ma'akev, if this is really what matters, hine amati bilha, ba'aleha, v'yevaneh gam anochi. That is the exact next pasuk. If that's what really matters, then take Bilhah and we'll do it. Mazun ivnit alidei tzarta, avzun ivnit, so we'll do the same thing. Vatomer Rachel, danani Elohim. Rachel says, God has judged me, when Bilhah then gives birth to Dan. Danani v'chivani, danani v'zachani. God has judged me, he obligated me, he has judged me, and he's given me given me merit. Oy vavoy. This is so, like, terribly painful. Yeah, it ends up with Bilhah being able to have a child through her. Bilhah doesn't seem to make the same mistake that Hagar does, right? We don't see Rachel being angry at Bilhah in the way that Sarah is angry at Hagar, but the circumstances through which it comes about, and I think the Midrash is very close to the Pshat, it's just inserting some lines in the middle, says there is just absolutely terrible communication between Yaakov and Rachel, all emanating from Yaakov's inability to really hear what Rachel has to say, to be there for her, right? To go back to Hillel's point. Technically, maybe it is correct. The biological problem is not Yaakov's. But from a ethical, moral, how to have a relationship with your significant other, that is completely not the way to speak to her. A hug, other words, let's speak, let's talk. Here is the bit that I skipped out, but I just quoted it from another Midrash because it puts it even sharper. Some of you may have heard me say this before because it's one of my favorite vorts, not vort because it's true, like one of my favorite just points on Sefer Bereshit. Vayichar af Yaakov b'Rachel, this is in the Sechel Tov, much older Midrash, much newer Midrash than Bereshit Rabbah, but just puts it a bit more punctually. Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu, v'chi kach onina tami'ikot, is this how you answer a woman who is in such pain? Chayecha, by your life, as punishment for this, Shebanecha omdim lifnei bana. One day, many years hence, your children, Yaakov's children, i.e. the daughter, all of his children who aren't through Rachel, will stand in front of her son, i.e. Yosef, in Mitzrayim. Vahu omer lahen, and he will say to them, Tachat Elohim ani, am I in place of God? The very final chapter of Bereshit, after Yaakov has died, the brothers come to Yosef and say to him, our father said on his deathbed that he didn't want you to punish us for what we did to you many years earlier. Please, please have mercy on us. They see that, they think that maybe Yosef wasn't punishing us for our vile acts towards him simply because he didn't want to do it whilst our father was alive. But now he will definitely use his power to kill us. Please don't do it. And Yosef says, Hatachat Elohim ani, am I in place of God? What a line. I mean, that is a midrash and a half, right? To be able to see, connect up the identical phrase, Hatachat Elohim Anochi, Hatachat Elohim Ani, said 20 chapters later, many generations later, that this is punishment to Yaakov. Yaakov, unable to sympathize, to empathize, to identify with Rachel, will be punished by her eventual child, being in such a position of having the power of life and death over all of his children who he's so proud of that God has given him. Right? This is his punishment. Hatachot Elohim Ani. Lo'od, that's not all. Sha'ata omer b'tema, you ask it as a question, am I in place of God? Uvana amar b'lashon amitit, he'll say it actually truthfully. He will say it with real power. Didi said that it's the same again, that Yaakov is making the same mistake as Avram of isolating and othering. I would say that actually it's the opposite. Both make an error, but the error is the opposite one of how not to treat your significant other. Sarah is unable to have children. Rachel is unable to have children. Avram at the center of the story. He is the sole significant person there. Anochi holech ariri. I am without children. There is no we involved. Yaakov says, Hatachot Elohim anochi. Am I in place of God? Asher mimanat mimech privaten. Yaakov puts Rachel at the center of the story and completely removes himself. He says it's got nothing to do with me. Avram says it's all to do with me. Rachel says it's not. Yaakov says it's nothing to do with me. Both fall on opposite sides of how not to act, of how not to treat one's spouse. Two ways in which, and I mean, let's be obvious here and let's be gendered for a moment, because there's no escaping it, right? Because this isn't just simply a message for all of us, right? Two ways in which husbands can make very bad mistakes about how not to speak to their wives when it comes to terrible pain over infertility. One is to say it's all about me,
And the other one is to say it's nothing at all to do with me.
I'm kind of going to draw a parallel between like Yaakov and Yitzchak, because I think it's kind of like Masa Avot Sinan Labanim.
Hold off on Yitzchak for the moment, if I can. We'll come to Yitzchak right now. All right? So here I was with Gabriella in the Bet Midrash a few months ago, talking through all this. And Gabriella, who I hope won't mind the compliment, Gabriella knows Tanakh. Gabriella's a Tanakhist. Yeah, don't say that lightly. Talking about Avram, talking about Yaakov. And Gabriella says, but Yitzchak and Rivka don't have any problems conceiving. Yeah, fair, right? Gabriella, who knows that enough, says that Yitzchak and Rivka don't have any problems conceiving. Let's turn to the beginning of Parashat Toldot. Let's remember, sorry, previously, end of Chaye Sarah. How old is Yitzchak when he marries Rivka?
40.
Explicit pasuk, right? Unlike the Akedah, we're very, very clear on age of Yitzchak at this juncture. He is 40 when he gets married. Rivka gives birth. Pasuk Kaf Zayin on page 126. Kaf Bav, pardon me. V'Yitzchak, the end of that verse. V'Yitzchak ben Shishim Shana Baledet Otan. Yitzchak is 60 when he becomes a father. 20 years pass between Yitzchak and Rivka being married and Yitzchak and Rivka having children. Exactly, says it, right? It's one verse, as Pinchas points out. Gabriella, who knows her Tanakh, she'd missed it. How is this story not... How did Gabriella miss the fact that Yitzchak and Rivka struggled to have children? Answer, she missed it because it's not presented with anywhere near the degree of centrality as Sarah's story is and as Rachel's story is. Why is that? Havei Omer, I wish to suggest and demonstrate to you, the reason why it's not nearly as central is because Yitzchak's way of dealing with it is completely different from that of his father and that of his son. As Hillel says, it is there in Pasuk Kaf Aleph. Vaya'ater Yitzchak laHashem lenochach ishto. How does article translate? Vaya'ater Yitzchak entreated God lenochach ishto, in front of his wife, ki akarahi, for she was barren, unable to have children. Vaya'ater lo Hashem. A lovely translation. Hashem allowed himself to be entreated by him. How about that? 7 words in English for a single word in Hebrew. V'tahar Rivka ishto. And Rivka conceives. Let's just notice the order of it. You hear about Yitzchak praying before you hear that Rivka is barren. If you just read V'yater Yitzchak laHashem, you don't know what he's praying about. Yitzchak puts that right at the front of it when it's completely absent, when Avram and Yaakov's story is only introduced by their wives coming to them saying, this is the terrible pain that I'm in. Yitzchak is already there. Lenochach ishto. What's that, lenochach ishto? What's that word, that phrase?
Good question.
Opposite his wife. Interesting, right? I mean, that says dalshuni. Look at this. Rashi and then the Midrash, back on the first side. Lenochach ishto, ze omed bezavit zu umitpalel. This one stands in this corner and prays. Vezu omed bezavit zu umitpalelet. And this one stands in this corner and prays. They both pray. Lenochach, each one opposite one another. Rashi is drawing on the following Midrash, which is a little bit more detailed. Ve'yater Yitzchak lenochach ishto, Rabbi Yochanan v'reish lakish, Rabbi Yochanan amal, sheshafach tfilot ba'osher. He poured out his prayers. Reish Lakish amal, shehefech et hagezeira, v'lafum ken kri la'atira da'pe idra lenochach ishto,
Melamed, to teach us. This is what happened. This is the picture you need to have in your mind. Shehaya Yitzhak Shatuach. Yitzhak was laid out flat on the ground, prostrated. Kan. V'hi Shatucha Kan, and she is prostrated on the ground. V'omer, and he says, Ribono Shel Olam, Master of the Universe, Kol Banim Sha'ata Noten Li, all of the children that you are going to give me, Yihyu Min HaTzadeket Hazu, I only want them to be from this woman, this beloved wife, this righteous woman. Afi Amra Ken, and Rivka said exactly the same thing. Kol Banim Sha'ata Atid, At Atid Liten Li, all the children you are future in the future going to give me, Yihyu Min HaTzadik Hazer, I only want them to be from this righteous man, I only want them to be from Yitzhak. Boom. That is how you do it. Chas v'shalom, chalila that, anyone that we know should have problems of infertility, but it is going to happen, because it happened then and it happens now. If it does happen, this is how you do it. You don't say, as the man, it's all about me, I don't have children. You don't say, as the man, it's all about you, you're unable to have children. Rather, you share it. Never forget that midrash, right? That midrash has just got all of it packed in into it. Against those who say Yitzhak is simply a... Against those who say that Yitzhak is sort of like a non-character wedged in between Avraham and Yaakov. What's so remarkable about Yitzhak? Well, before you get to this midrash, just the simplest thing, what's so remarkable about him? It's so obvious that you miss it. So obvious.
That he was going to be in a cave.
He doesn't have another wife. Yitzhak has one wife. That is so simple. You've all known that ever since you learned Bereshit for the first time. Have you ever actually thought about what that means? Yitzhak, 20 years of not having children, doesn't ever say, wealthy man, right? Doesn't ever say, let's find somebody else who I can have children with. Right? There is not all of that pain which is generated in his father's household and in his son's household is not there. And it's not there in the Midrash and almost in the text that Lenochach Ishto is very, very powerful, is there because Yitzhak is there for Rivka in a way in which Avram is not there for Sarah, and a way in which in a way in which Yaakov is not there for Rachel.
Also worth mentioning that he grew up in the house of Abraham when he sought attention with Sarah and Hagar, yeah, and pushing them out of the house.
Definitely. And if you want to push that a little bit more, just on the page previous from where we are, or just whatever, a couple bit more from that, when Eved Avraham is bringing back Rivka from Canaan, from Padan Aram, the Yitzhak ba mibo, Yitzhak is going out in the field, he's coming from Be'er l'chai ro'i. Bamibo is a very strange phrase. He comes from coming. It sounds like he's constantly coming from a place called Be'er l'chai ro'i. What is Be'er l'chai ro'i? The well of the living one who sees me. What is it?
That's where Hagar and Ishmael.
That's where Hagar and Ishmael are. That's where Hagar runs to in chapter 12, and it's where Hagar and Ishmael settle when she eventually leaves. Yitzhak is hanging out. Are Hagar and Ishmael there? I don't know, but like he's hanging out in the place associated with. With it, everybody says correctly the Arkadah is the ultimate event in Yitzchak's life and he's always living under its shadow. That's obviously true, but the expulsion of Hagar and Ishmael from his home, like, clearly has a major impact on him, right? And I think you can build it exactly into that. He takes that and practically into the next generation. And let's just, and if we have already started down the track of how Yitzchak is different from his father, right? To go back to the Midrash right at the start, right? Say, come and see, says the Midrash HaGadol. Everything that happened to Avraham happens to Yitzhak, right? Avraham nistapku al ishto, v'Yitzhak nistapku al ishto. They both have difficulties with conception. I wanted to claim, I hope we've demonstrated it, that the way in which they deal with it is completely different to one another. Same scenario, but absolutely different in terms of what they then do. And then, Avraham yatsa mimenu tzadik v'rasha v'Yitzhak kach. Avraham had a righteous child and a wicked child. And Yitzchak also did. And ask ourselves for a moment, are they actually parallel? Turn over, also Midrash HaGadol. V'ya'ahev Yitzchak et Esav. Yaakov, so Yitzchak loves Esav. V'chi lo haya avinu Yitzchak yodeh b'ma'aseh Esav shehen ke'orin. Did Yitzchak not know, just, you know, how negative, how toxic Esav's actions were? V'halo, ha'katuv omer, ha'lo misanecha, ha'shem misaneh, mipnei ma'havu. Why did he love him? Ela haya ohavo, b'fanav bilvad kedei lakarvo limshocho. He loved him in order to draw him closer, in order to keep him close. Kal v'chomer. Im kshu ohavo ma'asav mekulkalin. If, you know, loving him and having him at home and looking after him, he knew that Esav acts as he acts. Ilu sanu v'richku, if he were to hate him, if he were to distance himself from him. Alachat kama v'kama. How then would Esav act? V'amru rabotenu, and our rabbis have taught us, lo'olam tiyeh yamin makarevet v'smol doche. May a person always draw close with the right hand, i.e. with the strong hand, and push away with the left hand. L'kach ne'emar v'yehev Yitzchak et Esav. That's why Yitzchak loved Esav. Avraham has a problematic child, Yitzchak has a problematic child, Yishmael and Esav. What happens with Avraham? Problematic child is kicked out of the home. They never have a conversation with each other. Only at the end you find that, you know, Yishmael really loved his father, and, you know, Vayah hadavar me'od bo'odot b'no, Avraham didn't want Yishmael to leave home, but he's kicked out. Probably Rivka would have been very happy with Esav being kicked out. But Yitzchak doesn't allow for it, right? And he keeps him close, right? And he hugs him, right? And there's an element there of, you know, even if your children don't, you know, live up to the expectations that you have for them, so what? Keep them close and love them and do the best for them. So chas v'shalom, for anybody to say that Yitzchak just copies Avraham, or Yitzchak is a sort of just a passive character in between Avraham and Yaakov. Yitzchak. It's so easy to get it wrong. I don't mean to blame Avraham and Yaakov. I mean, yes, blame them. Midrash blames them. But, like, you know, it's very, very easy to get things wrong. These aren't easy things. Yitzchak gets it right. Yitzchak uniquely gets it right. Elisheva, you wanted to say something about Yitzchak before?
It wouldn't go with this lens of Yitzchak, so I'll not
say. Okay. So I'll finish, tell me after. I'll finish by way of Drush. I wrote something on Facebook shortly before Rosh Hashanah. I'm not going to read it out, but you might have been one of the quite a lot of people who liked it. All I pointed out was that there is a theme of Rosh Hashanah which is hiding in plain sight. It's just completely clear, and yet nobody talks about it. And it's the theme of infertility. Because on the first day of Rosh Hashanah, you read about Avram and Sarah not being able to have a child, and the story of Hagar and Yishmael. And on the second day of Rosh Hashanah, we read about the Akedah and Avram and Sarah almost losing the child that they've tried for so long to have. And on the Haftarah of the first day, you read about Chana, who's a very parallel story in Sefer Shmuel, of her not being able to have a child. And on the second day, the Haftarah is from Yirmiyahu, which features the verses of Rachel. Kol barama nishma, a voice is heard on high. Nehi b'chi tamrurim, a weeping voice. Rachel mavaka al baneha, Rachel is crying for her children, she'enenu, that are not there. Rachel, who in her life is the person who struggles more than anybody to have children in her afterlife, and Tanakh becomes sort of like the ultimate mother, who is seen as always praying for her children. Four out of four readings. Imagine the competition, by the way, of, like, you know, different parts of Tanakh wanting to be the readings on Rosh Hashanah, right? Wouldn't it be amazing to read Bereshit chapter 1 on Rosh Hashanah, creation of the world? Why wouldn't that be fantastic? Wouldn't Har Sinai be fantastic as making God king or something else? Instead, Chazal didn't do it once, that would be sufficient. 4 out of 4 readings, Chazal placed infertility at the center of it. And I wrote that, you know, sometimes we make a mistake and we think that all the messages of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur have to be excessively spiritual in order for them to be meaningful. Maybe what Chazal is just trying to show you is something very, very simple, right? That there's a terrible pain that people live with who are unable to have children, men and women, couples. And I tell you because, you know, many, many of our friends do have it, and only some of them actually speak publicly about it, but, you know, others, but most keep it to themselves. And maybe what Chazal are telling you by choosing these 4 readings on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur is that be sensitive to this, right? You know, work out what to say, work out what not to say, be that extra support. That's what I wrote on Facebook. And then this was all thanks to Gabriella and conversation with her. And then I gave it in, then I gave this as a drasha at 6th Street on Rosh Hashanah second day. And all I added to the Facebook post was the following. Don't just notice what's there, also notice what's not there. Because what story of infertility is not presented on Rosh Hashanah? Yitzhak and Rivka. And what Chazal are showing you by that is learn how not to act. And Yitzhak and Rivka are the model of, you know, of how to be. Yitzhak takes his place. Don't think of Yitzhak's significance on Rosh Hashanah just of the Akedah. Think of Yitzhak and Rivka's significance on Rosh Hashanah of this is how to do it. Shkoyach, everybody. Mm.